It's the most wonderful time in Pat's Game Room. Welcome, everyone, to the Holiday Completely Unnecessary Podcast. December 21st, 2021. It's a Tuesday. That's Ian.
Hi.
In the warm den up in Buffalo.
So, yeah, this is like the most... This is the most comfortable place I've ever recorded. This is the library or office. My dad did all the woodwork in here. He's kind of crazy.
It was a carpenter, right?
He was a teacher. I mean, this was only a hobby.
Oh.
Beautiful. It's pretty nuts.
Well, on the show today, we'll be talking about some deep dive gameplay videos for the Intellivision Amico. We'll be talking a little bit about NFTs. I want to do an update about NFTs because of the
comments. Oh, do you?
Well, the comments we had from our video last week were kind of funny.
So I ignored them entirely. I knew they were going to be a mess.
We'll follow up with that a little bit, and then we're going to do a Patreon poll and a Q&A. Well, it might be a shorter one, but I got my little ears. I got it from the dollar store. I have the same as well.
They're not going to be short.
Antenna.
Huh? Soaking up family good vibes. I do like your antenna. They're very nice.
Antenna.
Those were dollar store purchases. Yes.
They look like it. Dollar and a quarter. I went to Sacramento this past weekend. Boy, I flew to Sacramento. Boy, were my arms tired. And if you listen to the exclusive, you can learn more about that. Patreon.com/CU podcast. You'll learn more about that. I also saw Spider-Man No Way Home, Ian.
Yeah, and was it as good as you hoped it would be? It seemed like everyone who was really, really looking forward to it was extremely happy. So I'm happy about that. I don't care about spoilers, so this is probably going to be spoilery. Okay, but yeah, so go ahead and tell me what happened.
So if you don't want to be spoiled, let's see, we're at like 2.5 minutes into the podcast. You probably want to go ahead at least 10 minutes. I ain't going to talk about it for long because I did a 30-minute video review the day I saw it. The Rare Pat movie review came out, so you can watch that. But so yeah, spoilers, fast forward 10 minutes. If you're on audio or hit pause on your iPod in your car, scramble, get into a car accident to hit the thing. It exceeded my expectations.
Which is not something I expected you to say.
I didn't think it was going to be bad because it's Disney making it and not shitty Sony. I understand that. But
you had issues with the first one and the second one, right?
Oh, I had issues. I had major issues with the first one. I'm on record publicly. I got into arguments with my buddy Matt McMuscles about I don't like Iron Lad Spider-Man. I don't like him being under Tony Stark's being a protege under his fucking foot and hero worshiping Tony Stark, because again, Peter never hero worshipped anyone. The whole point was he was overly arrogant, especially starting out to prove himself because he's a nerd and was an outcast. And so he's like, fuck you all. I can prove myself because I have all these powers. And that's why he got into a lot of fights with like the Human Torch, specifically Johnny Storm back in the day, because he represented everything Spider-Man wasn't, like popular and all the women loved him and, you know what I mean, cool. And Peter wasn't. So like that stuff was all lost. Like they didn't have even a modicum of that in these movies at all.
You know? Right.
Tom Holland's character wasn't. I mean, is a geeky sort of thing, but geek is now cool. It's like you're not really downtrodden. He's going to a school for the gifted in these ones. So it's like, you know, he doesn't have a bad life. So especially if you have Tony Stark giving you all this fucking tech, you don't have a bad life. Spider-Man is supposed to struggle. Peter's supposed to struggle. He's a working class family, you know, no money, struggling to survive in Queens. And this character is not that. But
silver spoons.
Exactly. Relying on Tony Stark tech to get you out of your trouble is belittling to the character. And that's how it's been the first couple of movies, especially with all these different suits. So I'll get into. So I don't know if it was planned, but this is like a trilogy origin, basically. They took him 3 movies. Again, I don't know if it was planned, but it takes his 3rd movie for him to truly establish to me what Spider-Man sort of is. So the big thing is that to me is that they don't ever really address Uncle Ben in any of these movies. Who I think exists. I think there's like they reference being on our own Aunt May, and I think there's like a picture with Aunt May and an older person and one of them, or older gentleman suitor in one of them, but they never established that. So you don't ever know if Peter had that that's an integral part of his origin is letting Uncle Ben die. That's as important to that character as it is for Batman's parents having been killed or for Superman being an alien from Krypton. You cannot take that away from the character and have it be that character anymore. I don't care. You can't. That establishes the core ideal of the character and what they stand for. So the first two movies, you haven't had that. They kind of reference that in Civil War briefly, or Spider-Man, or Peter Shipley says, well, if you don't do the right thing, some people can get hurt. So they reference something happened, but not necessarily Ben dying. But so in this movie, what they did in a roundabout way was have Aunt May become Uncle Ben. Aunt May gets killed in this movie.
Oh, that's a big thing. Yeah.
It's big. It's big. It's big.
That's big.
It's big. You sort of see it coming, but it's still very like heartfelt and sad.
Uh-huh.
And she utters the lie.
Oh,
dying. But you don't know she's going to be dead yet. That's the thing. It's one of those things where it's like a fake. Oh, she gets hurt. It's hard. I gave Sony some shit for that last trailer because they show like a big moment where MJ is falling.
Uh-huh.
Spider-Man's trying to catch her. And I gave them shit, but like you really could not have made a trailer for this film without spoiling much of anything. Like you would have to spoil something. So you pick and choose what you spoil.
So you gave them shit for showing something, but it ended up not being the pinnacle piece that you thought it was going to be. It was just they had to put something in there.
Yes. So my apologies, Sony, because Sony did cut the trailer.
Sony that cut it.
Yeah, because they're distributing the movie.
Oh, right.
They're putting up most of the money for it. So that was still a big moment, which I can talk about. But like, basically, this movie goes from Spider-Man's life being fucked, but they kind of gloss over it. My biggest fanboy moment was Charlie Cox showing up as Matt Murdock.
That's amazing. I would have lost it up for that. That would have been good.
Only like a third of the audience did, but like I went nuts because they finally established, you know, those Netflix characters as being part of the MCU. Before it was like, are they really? And now with the Kingpin back on the Hawkeye show, they're really starting to establish him again, because the Charlie Cox playing Daredevil could be the closest or one of the best interpretations of a superhero ever.
Like, yeah, we've said it. I mean, it's fantastic.
It's a character dead on.
I'm kind of over a lot of the Marvel stuff, but I am interested in what they do with Daredevil because I did enjoy the TV show, and I will watch. I'll start watching Hawkeye. I want to see what Yoshi did, but also I can't not watch his Kingpin. It's one of the
great.
D'Onofrio's Kingpin is between him and Charlie Cox's Daredevil, you have two of the best castings I've ever seen.
Oh yeah, and so they established that the best part about it is, they didn't have to put that in the movie. Like it was like a minute scene that like you could have cut that out and it would not have lost anything. They did that. Like that was like Kevin Feige. Like, I love this character. We're going to bring him back. I'm putting this in this movie. Like it was one of those sort of things where it's like, you didn't need it. He only had the one little scene. It was a glorified cameo, but the crowd went nuts. It was total fan service. There was a funny payoff. There was jokes with Happy and Aunt May around the table there. So it goes from that to, you know, asking Dr. Strange to, you know, fix my fuck up. I want a spell where everyone forgets I'm Spider-Man. Well, except for Ned and except for MJ and Aunt May, I can't tell me. So the spell gets screwed up. You think it's contained, but it then gets screwed up. And then basically the spell reverses itself. And everyone who knows Peter Parker is Spider-Man from every other universe comes into their universe. So it's kind of smart how they do it. So they bring the villains in. So when I saw the trailers and everything, I thought that most of the villains would be glorified like cameos. And they get arcs, like they give them arcs as much as they can between five different villains. So Sandman has some sort of arc, probably the weakest one, but like Electro, Jamie Foxx has an arc. Even the Lizard does a little bit, but like they got a lot more lines and screen time than I thought they would get. Alfred Molina was fucking exceptional.
Of course he was.
As Doc Ock. He was like, people went nuts when they saw him. It was almost a better version of the character than Spider-Man 2, which is one of the best superhero movies ever.
Well, same guy. So if someone was going to beat it, it would be him.
But like they give him a full arc with callbacks and like it's the same character. Like they 17 years later played it like the same as that character. And then Willem Dafoe was incredible. Incredible. And you didn't think that he would be the guy that would be like the main antagonist. They kept that pretty much like a secret, that like how much these villains are in this movie. They mm-hmm. they're like one-off battles. No, they're in most of the movie. And Willem Dafoe's performance was exceptional. Like, it was better than what he was 20 years ago. Like, he
wrote, he's a great actor, man. Apparently he has a huge member too.
What's that?
Apparently he has a huge dong.
Oh, okay. All right. But he came back. He wanted to do most of his own stunts. He's 66. He doesn't look that old. He's aging. He's in great shape. Where did the huge dong thing come from?
It was going around with the recent Spider-Man stuff again. Apparently, he's been filmed nude in a number of scenes, and the directors are like, we can't use you because people are only going to focus on the size of your wang.
Well, of course, if I got a huge dong, I want to be naked in every movie. Like let's do it.
They use stunt cocks for Willem Dafoe that are smaller so that it's not like such a big thing.
Literally. Ba-dum-tsh. Yeah. I was not amazed, but I was surprised how much the villains got.
I was worried about that. I was afraid it was going to be like a Spider-Man 3 thing, which I haven't seen.
But, yeah.
I mean, I was afraid it was just going to be too much trying to cram into. How long was the movie? 2.5?
2 hours 15. So there's enough time to build it out. Okay. There's only like 4 set pieces in the whole movie. There's the very, very well done Dr. Octopus fight. It might be better than the Spider-Man 2 fight that's done in the highway. Then you have Spider-Man trying to get the magic box from Doctor Strange, because if he hits the button, it'll basically reset and send the villains back, which most of them go back to their deaths. And so that's why Doctor Strange is like, well, screw them. They got to get out of here. And Spider-Man's like, well, I want to give them a second chance. And that's where the great power responsibility thing comes in, because he feels responsible for their lives. He doesn't want to send them back to be killed. So I'm like, okay, that's kind of clever. I kind of get that. I kind of get it. And then, of course, the big thing is that there's like, basically, he tries to reform all the villains. It goes haywire. He's like, okay, we can think of tech to basically get you all back, like cure Green Goblin's insanity from the serum, mm-hmm. cure Electro is electricity, cure the lizard. You know what I mean? He does the chip to Alfred Molina's Dr. Octopus to put him back in control. So he becomes a protagonist for the rest of the movie, Dr. Octopus. He helps him out.
Oh,
like, this is cool. This is some good stuff here. And it was interesting seeing the interplay between like Alfred Molina and Willem Dafoe, because they're from the same universe, but in those movies, obviously they're not in the same movies, but they talk to each other like they knew each other for years. So it was like, wow, they're doing some decent writing here. Like they're not just throwing this shit together. They're putting some layers on this that I was, kudos to the two writers who wrote it. I forget their names. Then of course the other fear was, well, Tobey Maguire and Andrew Garfield are going to show up for like the last 20 minutes and that's it. Oh no. They show up. I clocked it. They show up about an hour, 20, 25 into the movie, roughly.
Oh, so they get about 45 minutes to an hour.
45 to 50 minutes to go.
Nice.
They get time to shine. They get time to interact all through each other, like in the lab together, because they go back to trying to fix the villains and stuff. Besides, you know, they don't want to just kill them. They want to fix them. And you see a lot of things brought back. References, and Andrew Garfield's character is still bitter from the death of Gwen Stacy in Amazing Spider-Man 2, and Tobey Maguire's character, he alludes to, yeah, we made it work, me and MJ. So it's like, okay, I wish I would have saw Kirsten Dunst. That's one of my main problems. You don't see her.
Oh, she wasn't
like,
in it?
No, I thought they would like go back to their worlds and you'd see him at back of their worlds for a couple of seconds, like 15 seconds, maybe an extended cut. I would love to see Sally Field, her Aunt May, and I'd love to see Kirsten Dunst. That was one of my main issues was that. But maybe in an extended cut, because you can tell they probably cut things out. But they get a chance to interact. Their chemistry between the three of those actors is better than you think it's going to be between them. Because they basically have different personalities as Peter. Andrew Garfield's Peter is way different than Toby's, different than Tom Holland's, because they're different versions, so to speak. And it's really funny. All the leaks were real. All of them. The 4D video of Andrew Garfield moving was directly shot in the movie, minus like the effects. So someone took that almost direct feed. Could have been someone at Sony or Marvel to get the word out. Like it was the direct. And then like the photo was direct. I was like, okay, that's the photo. The Charlie Cox, like there's Charlie Cox. Like, they were all real. None of them were fake. So maybe Marvel leaked, maybe Disney leaked because they wanted to make sure people knew these people were in the movie. Maybe. So yeah, it exceeded expectations. The fights were brutal. Willem Dafoe, when he goes back to the Green Goblin, he tricks him because it's the good versus the bad. He fucking power bombs Spider-Man through like 3 stories of the building, like brutal hand to hand combat, like inside this like condo or apartment complex. And I'm like, this is like raw, some of this.
Right.
So the fight scenes were well done. Yeah, there's a lot of effects in CG for the finale because you have all the like four or five villains fighting each other, things like that. But no, I was like, this isn't perfect, but this is like, I tried to say, can I do an un-Spider-Man bias on this film? And I said, okay, for a Spider-Man fan, this is like a 10 out of 10. Non-Spider-Man fan, I think I settled on like an 8.5, maybe a 9. But I was trying to be like reasonable. Okay, take your Spider-Man bias out of it. This is one of the better MCU movies by far. Because thematically, it gets Spider-Man right. This is the Spider-Man closer to what I wanted. And it ends up at the end of the movie, they actually show him, he sews his own fucking costume at the end. And it looks like a traditional Romita-esque era, you know, mid to late 60s Spider-Man costume. No fucking tech. So establishes, this is Spider-Man. It took you 3 movies to get to Spider-Man. This is it. And I was like, okay, I didn't agree with them because 3 movies should not be a full origin, but whatever, they did it. And now this is like fully Spider-Man. And supposedly they're going to do like a college trilogy of films. They're going to do 3 more with him as like the college trilogy. And I'm like, all right, I'm in. I want Kraven.
That'll be fun.
I want Kraven.
You know what's perfect in any universe?
What's that, Ian?
UltimateNintendo.com.
That's right, Ian. You can have your multiverse of fun with guidebooks, RBI baseball stickers, which I sold in Sacramento the past week, and also get into. You got the enamel pins and more, and limited t-shirts as well. Ian's 2,000 miles away. You can still hear it.
3,000.
2,000 miles away. And and I'll be doing a holiday Twitch stream Wednesday, twitch.tv/countrycode. So I went to Sac Gamers Expo this last weekend. Thanks so much for having me out there. And there was a guy there, like early 20s. Just saw him from the eyes up. We all had masks on. He's like, hey, I'm the guy or kid who gave you the roll of RBI baseball stickers. Now, you know what? I recognize him in that moment. Like, I was like, that's him. Probably, but he was like 14 when he did it, or 15. Now he's like 21, 22. And so I got the story wrong in my head. He gave it the roll to me at one of the previous SoCal Retro Gaming Expos. He said he found it at a swap meet. I thought I got it at a swap meet from him. So in my head, the story got screwed up.
Gotcha.
Yeah, I should have taken a picture with him. I brought some stickers. I should have taken a picture with him, but it was very nice to see him. He was selling there with a group of like 3 or 4 guys that were selling, you know, games there. But I didn't buy anything there. There wasn't a lot for me to buy anymore. I've been to 5 conventions this year, and for actual game stuff, like games, not like plush or weird shit, or like the fucking Link costume, that doesn't count. But for actual game stuff, I don't think I've spent even $100 this year.
Sure, games. What is there you still need?
Not counting like, you know, hardware or whatever I come across, but like, no, that's like people I got. There was one seller there where like it's almost like it wasn't clicking. I'm not trying to take a shot at him, but like, he wasn't understanding. He's like, so Pat, what are you buying these days? I'm like, well, you know, I'm not really buying much anymore. You know, I have my few sets that I have, and you know, I'm kind of slowing down. And it's like, it's almost like the words didn't get through. It was sure. Like, second time, but you're still buying stuff, right? Like you're buying stuff and collecting. I was like, no, I'm like, I'm really not buying anything anymore. I'm just not. It felt like a shock to the person, I guess. It's like, that doesn't make any sense to stop collecting, but I guess to some people it doesn't make sense. I was like, no, I'm done. Like, I'll still buy things here and there, but I'm done. I'm not hunting on eBay anymore. You know what I mean? I'm not going to the swap. I go to swap like once every 3 months at this point because there's nothing there anyway. And it's just it's amazing, I guess, that, you know, until you get to that point, you guess you can't imagine not buying stuff anymore and collecting.
Well, the Analog Pocket is, I mean, I finally have stuff that I'm looking for again now, you know, Game Gear games, etc. But I'm not really looking for much of anything either. It's just, there's only so many Game Boy games you can buy.
And I got my Crix multi-carts on the way.
Sure.
So I got that on the way, and that'll be like most of the, it's funny. I was an idiot. And I bought both the Master System and the Genesis one. The Genesis one supports Master System games. I didn't realize.
Yep.
So I bought the Master System one. I'm like, oh, whatever. Now I got both. I guess I want to play in a Master System.
Got a full set.
I forgot the Genesis one supports the Sega CD games. I forgot that.
Some of them. Yeah. The newest one.
Yeah. So like, I was okay, I'm set. I got the Game Boy. I got them all. I did the 20% off sale. I was like, fuck it. I'll spend $500 and get the rest of them. I got them all. I just don't have the Lynx and Jaguar ones, which are available, I think, on Atari Age. You can get those. I don't have the Vectrex one either, but, you know, it's a Vectrex. I have the I have the multi-card metrics one though. I got that, the Sean Kelly's famous one that has mm-hmm. everything in the homer. So that's pretty much that. So
yeah, don't need a whole lot more.
What else is going on, Ian?
I've been playing a lot of the Pocket. It's been my travel buddy. Not a whole lot else. I've been sitting around and chatting with my parents, drinking whiskey.
This is the first time I've seen your parents in what, a couple of years?
2.5 years.
2.5. Okay. Yeah. Wow.
And it was 3 years between, because of my gut issues and because of like, work and conventions and whatnot that I had to do. It was 3 years before that. And I get along great with my parents. I love my parents, get along wonderfully with my family. So it's been tough not seeing him as much as I'd like. I usually try to, you know, there was a long time there where I was trying to get back at least for a little bit once a year. Mm-hmm. So yeah, it's just been nice to sit around and chat. And I've had a ton of fun hanging out and playing with my niece and nephew. Because my niece is 9 now and my nephew is 5, and they're full on little people at this point.
The little people, they have
personality. Yeah, they're exactly. Lucy was kind of at that point when the last time I was home, but obviously even more so now. And Alejandro was too young to remember me the last time I was home, and him and I have just gotten along like nothing else. It's really kind of heartwarming. Within like an hour of me being here the first day, he like just jumped onto the couch and sat in my lap, and we've been buddies. I love it. So that's cool. I got to see a bunch of my family members at the family Christmas party on the 19th, and I'm going out to play pinball with a bunch of them tomorrow and a couple of local friends. The only sad thing is we were supposed to go up to Toronto to have dinner with our friend Kelly. Every time Vonnie and I come back to Buffalo, we go up to Toronto, sometimes for a few days, sometimes for just one. You know, this time it was just going to be one day just to have dinner. And the COVID stuff threw a huge wrench in the gears. The tests that they require now are far more expensive. You need the more expensive tests. And it was just like, it was going to be $500 to get us over the border.
Antibody, not the antigen. Is that why?
You can't do rapid antigens. You've got to do antibody. Whatever. Yeah. The antibody test or whatever.
More
time,
but it's more precise, but it takes more.
Sure. And I get it. It was just, that wasn't the case 2 weeks ago when we made the reservations, and I knew it was a risk and, gambled and lost on it. But other than that, it's been a great trip. Still got a few days to go, and loving being home. No snow though.
No snow. It's like 60 degrees.
Nah, it's like 39 today, but when I landed here it was or the day before we got here it was 65. It wasn't too bad when we landed here. Even Vonnie's doing okay. She's doing better than she expected with the cold. Well, the first time she came here, the first time I brought her here, and I think it was 2009, that was the first time she had ever like been in snow. I mean, it was, you know, a true shock, but I think she's finally getting used to it.
Well, Sacramento, it was like 36 degrees when I arrived in Sacramento. So I was like, because Northern California is cold.
Yeah.
It's cold. So I was like, it was like not a shock. I'm like, oh, I almost missed this cold air a little bit. Like if it's good.
I love it. I feel alive.
I breathed it, and I was like, I took off the mask outside the airport. I was like, okay, this is the brisk air. I do like this.
Yeah. It's refreshing. Wow. And I understand people who don't want to live in it or who don't love it. I get it. I don't love heat. But for me, that's it. Like that 39, 40 degree, 35 degree weather where like you feel that chill as you breathe in. I live for that.
40 degrees is it. Because at 40 degrees back in Jersey when I was there, I used to tell people I didn't wear a jacket unless it hit freezing.
Oh, yeah, I don't. I've been walking around in a hoodie all the whole trip.
No, I would literally just have a long sleeve shirt. When I went out, it was like 42 degrees, 43. I would just wear a long sleeve shirt. I was fine.
Yeah.
You adjust to it.
Yeah.
Plus I had probably a little more blubber. So it kept me warm. Northeast blubber. Grant, well, glad you're having fun. I'll be doing my Feast of the Seven Fish with Christmas Eve meal with Frank, around which my entire life revolves that around at night.
I like living vicariously through your Feast of the Seven Fish.
Oh, you get some of the fringe benefits. You get some of the struthely every
year. I do get some of the struthely.
If you're nice to Pat, give you some struthely. Nice. Oh, it's so good.
Yeah, it is delicious.
It's fantastic. By the way, a new flea market new Flea Market Madness is out, which is a holiday one because I filmed it December 2015, volume 43. Check it out there. It just, it sort of lined up that way. You know, the end of the year, 6 years ago. Jesus. Can I go back to there? Just like, can we live in 2015?
I don't want to live in...
No, you don't want to live anytime. You don't like want to live in the 80s.
No, it's true. I don't want to live anytime. it's a hassle at all. It's a hassle every era.
I want to live in the time of the Astro City Mini 5.
Oh, the Astro City Mini 5 looks fucking great, and it's too expensive.
I had no idea they did 5 of these.
There's lots of Astro Cities. Okay, I think it looks awesome. So this is great. It's shooter focused, and two of the games, I can't remember exactly which ones. Let's see if I can if I can suss that out. Two of the games have never been ported before to home ports. They've only been the arcade titles. But a lot of this is shooters. We've got like classics like Armed Police Bat Rider. We've got Batsugun, Dogyun, Truxton 2. The first Tatsujin, which is Truxton, Samurai Aces, Raiden, Moon Cresta, Gunbird, Grindstormer, Fire Shark, which I love. This is like
they give you Wrestle War.
Yeah, they give you Wrestle War.
Zaxxon, they give you the old Zaxxon.
Zaxxon. Yeah, Outzone and Dogyun are the first times they've ever been ported.
Wow.
I like a lot of these mini cabinets and was tempted by the Taito Egret 2. But it was really expensive. This though. Like,
I put a 13-minute video showing you all the games, which is nice.
And a lot of these are like obviously easy to licensed ones, like yeah, Samurai Aces,
Action Fighter,
like Strikers 1945, Samurai Aces, Aero Fighters. Those have all been like ported a billion times, but some of these are really like really impressive like ports. So I would love this. This looks very cool.
Is this a sort of thing though? At some point you can just hack it and put all the other ones from the other ones on here. Probably.
I don't know that this has a rotatable screen though. The Egret did, which is one of the big things. You could change like the screen. Obviously I think that you could probably look into these and hack them, but we are getting to the point like it was with the Zelda Game & Watch is that some of these games are so small that there are really cheap memory amounts that they can put in them, which makes it almost pointless to hack. Like there's no point in hacking the Game & Watch. There's probably a point to hacking these, but I don't know if anyone's going out of their way to do it. You know, I mean, if it's not, if there's no SD card, if it can't hold, you know, everything, I think people are probably just leaving them the way they are.
Looks like most of these games are vertical anyway. They're all one.
Yeah. As a matter of fact, I'm looking at it. I'm not certain. Wrestle War should be, would be
let's see,
traditional.
No, it's vertical. At least on this. Yeah, it's vertical.
Wrestle War?
Yeah, I'm looking at it on the trailer.
Yeah, no, those are all verticals. So,
God, I love Wrestle War. I'm so mad I never got a port to North America. It came out in the Mega Drive in Japan. With freaking Hulk Hogan on the cover, they don't care about that stuff.
Right?
They don't care about what's copyright and using people's appearances. You don't own your face, Hogan. We own you. We'll throw in every Fire Pro game ever established. So, all right, what's this going to cost?
About $200.
What did the other ones cost? About that?
I think the Egret was like $140, but then if you wanted like the Arkanoid spinner with the expansion ROMs and stuff, that was like another $100 or something.
That's right.
Actually, it might have been even more than that because I remember that full thing. Everyone was like if you bought all the expansions for the Egret Mini, I think you ended up at like $400.
Yeah, it was nice, but like it was because you had the extra paddle controller. That's right.
These are super nice, but they are spendy. This is like the first one, like I said, that I think makes me almost consider dropping the cash on it, but I'll probably pass.
Okay. Well, it's one of those things where I guess if you got one of the other ones, you want the different lineups, you're going to, what do you, put them up on a table? You have all four or five of them there?
I mean, it is cool to see these. I mean, they're iconic cabinets. So, yeah, it is neat to have them as like a little collectible piece too, I suppose.
Has there really been five or they just called it the five?
No. The other ones weren't Astrocades. They were different. So, oh, no, there was an Astrocade.
There was an Astro.
Yeah, there was an Astro City. Oh yeah, there was that one. Sega did one with the because it had like Virtua Fighter and shit on it.
Yeah, we.
I don't think
it.
There's been five of them. I think that's okay. Just the model of the cabinet.
Okay, so this is like the second one. Yeah, they came out earlier this year.
Yeah.
The Astro City Mini. Yeah. It had, you're right, it had the Sega stuff on it, it looks like. Had Fantasy Zone, Golden Axe. Yeah, we covered this. So this is the second one they've done, but this is now...
The model is the Astro City 5, I think. Gotcha.
Between that, the two Astro City Minis, the Taito one, there's the SNK Neo Geo one. Are we missing one? Is there another? Is there a fifth one?
There's the Taito Egret, this, the SNK Mini, and yes, I do think there's one we're missing somewhere, but I don't know what it is.
There's like four or five of them. Okay, that's interesting. Imagine they put out a Nintendo Play Choice one. Oh, boy.
With time limits and everything?
Oh, no. That would be actually fucking... Oh, boy. Nintendo, I just gave you a product for next Christmas. I'm so... That would sell ridiculously. A Play Choice 10 Mini. Wow. How come I didn't think of that before?
That would sell very well.
It'd be a kiosk thing. You could put 10 games in it. Some third party. They have most of the first party ones. Oh, that would sell. You sell that for $250. Everyone buy that. Yeah. And then you can link up two of them. Ooh, that would be sweet.
That would be cool.
Get the red versus cab.
Oh, yeah. Do a tank
cab.
Yeah.
NFTs, Ian.
Fuck them.
Kickstarter might start to use NFTs.
Fuck NFTs. Has this just
kicked up more the past month than what I've been getting? I should out some of them. I'm getting emails now every week to do NFTs from random people from all over, from different parts of the world. Some are like condescending. An NFT is this, and I'm like, all right. And they okay, well, we can do an NFT for you. And I'm like, okay, great. It seems like we're reaching some sort of like zenith point of NFTs really quickly, starting from the spring where everyone discovered what they were to only like 8-9 months later. It's like, okay, we're now everyone's trying to do them, but now we're getting fucked. Now it's a war against it.
I think this is kind of like, I think what kind of happened is, you know, these haven't been around forever earlier this year. And I think the way, you know, the corporate world works, I think a lot of people had ideas then and they fleshed them out and now they're presenting what they discussed completely ignoring the backlash against them that's occurred over the past, you know, 5 months or so. This Kickstarter one is particularly egregious because even though they said that it was going to help creators, everyone was like, bullshit, it's not going to help creators. Then they came back and they said, we're doing this because it's going to help creators. And then they released an FAQ that they were like, answers all your questions. And the FAQ is just more vague buzzwords and fluffy bullshit. Nothing that it's going to do is going to make any difference to anyone who's ever had a project on Kickstarter. It's just not.
What is it? Give me a coin that I can trade in for money? What is it going to do?
I don't know. Everything is still going to act in cash. It's literally, they're just, I saw this online. This is not an original thought, but it was funny. And I'm like, you know how there's all these fucking coins. So this is running on the, what is the network? CeeLo. Someone's like, one of these guys who runs Kickstarter probably got fucking suckered into buying a fucking shitload of this coin and now wants to make it into something. So they're just going to go ahead and torpedo their entire business by trying to force it onto the blockchain.
That's the thing, I guess. It's like, well, maybe you can, like the creators be able to transfer it to this coin. Then if the coin goes up, you can make more money. But the coin can go down in value because it's like, what the fuck do you do with these crypto?
Just like I said, they keep saying everything's going to keep going in cash. It's just they're going to run it on this blockchain, which is, you know, a way for people who have a lot of this coin to make this coin worthwhile. I swear someone at Kickstarter's got to be sitting on a pile of this and they're like, well, I got to make this a good business decision instead of a bad one.
The whole thing with the NFTs and the crypto, the whole thing is pump and dump. That's it. It's just, can I find a bigger idiot that will spend more on it than what I bought it for? That's it. I'm not being too simplistic. That's what this stuff is.
Yeah.
That's all it is.
Yep.
That's it. There's no use to this stuff. So when we commented on the Ubisoft and get into it, we of course had like some people say, you don't understand it. You don't understand. And one of these assholes gets in the comment and said, you want to get on it now because in the future it might be too late. And it's just like, okay, they love doing that then. Yeah. What is this then? A pyramid scheme? You got to get it early or else it has no value. So then you're telling me what it is. You're trying to fleece everyone after you. That's what this all is. It's just a money-making scheme. That's all it is.
Yes.
That's it. Don't even try to pretend it's not that. You're just a slime ball who wants to sucker the people behind you to get into it. That's all it is. That's all it's ever been.
Yes.
And now we're finally having more and more people come out against it. Like our pal, chillest dude ever. I love him. One of my favorite people, Alex Bassiani. Good old Alex. It was just the timing, because I think there was an artist that, or there was some asshole saying, oh, NFTs show it shows your status digitally. I think a lot of people respond to that asshole. It's like, you're just a fucking loser if you need a fucking digital status of NFT or whatever. Alex said, don't buy NFTs, you stupid idiots. You stupid, stupid idiots. And Alex doesn't usually talk like that, which shows you how upset he is about NFTs. Digital status, what the fuck are you talking about? You can't even prove your own identity on here, much less whether you own some stolen Hellboy art.
Yeah.
Fine. Then it says, find me a creative who loves and supports NFTs, who has nothing to directly gain from them. Then he says, finally, NFT owner, these things are the future. And if you get in now,
right,
you'll end up rich. You always get in now. Literally anyone without fuck you money who's interested in NFTs. Okay, nice. I'll use my savings on this pirated pick of Scarlet Witch. NFT owner. Okay, but if you end up broke, that's on you.
Yeah, and there's a good reply here too. That's just like, you could financially support artists by commissioning them. Yep. It's not like there's been no way to give artists money online.
Yes.
And that's what they're acting like. This is the first way for a digital artist to get paid. I don't know. I commission art pretty frequently.
But there's no FOMO. And easy.
Right, there's no FOMO. You can't get rich on it that way.
Sure. No, that's what it is. You don't give a shit.
If it was actually about owning art and paying artists, it would just be commissions. And
I saw a thread about how some artists have sold their souls on this.
I talked about it last week, unfortunately.
But the means of that they're doing it, they're basically doing the same thing we've seen with fucking graded games or any other collectible, where it's like, well, how do you show your stuff is worth money? You use another account to buy your own shit. It's like, oh, and then you announce it. Oh, I just sold an NFT for, I think I saw the example, like for $12,000. Yeah, you create an account and sold it for $12,000. And some idiot then buys it for like $14,000 based upon the artificial inflation that you gave it by buying yourself. So it's like, this is bizarro land. And if the 95% of us who are reasonable have to shout this stuff down constantly and call the other 5% grifting idiots, then we're going to continue to do it, as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah.
Because this is the most transparent scheme I have ever seen.
I've never seen companies go forward so pigheadedly in the face of near universal backlash.
And the fact that people have to bend over backwards to say it's not a scheme, that are invested. Like, if I want to hear someone that has no investment in any of this shit in these NFTs, tell me, give me the reason why it's great.
Oh yeah, that's a big thing. That should be a major red flag. I can find no one who's not invested in these who talks positively about them. It's only people who suddenly have something to lose or gain.
At the Sack Gamers Expo, I sat down. Jay was next to me at the table. Jay from the Game Chasers. He hasn't been keeping up with any of this. I sat down and I explained the NFT to him and tried it. And I saw his mind move. And I said, okay, Jay, you're buying something online, but you're not buying the item. You're buying a receipt for an item that you don't own. And then you hope that the receipt that you bought for that goes up in value for that item. And that's how it works. You buy and sell the receipt. You don't own the rights to the NFT.
Right.
You have a receipt for an item you don't own. And the look on his face was like, he just said, well, that's fucking stupid. I was like, yes. Yes, it is. But this is ecosystem now. He understood it was fucking stupid immediately. Like, most people with common sense realize that it's fucking stupid. You're passing digital receipts back and forth to shit you don't own. You don't own it. You don't own it.
Dumb.
You own a facsimile of something that someone else owns. It's ridiculous.
Yeah.
Oh, boy. That's fun stuff, Ian.
Good stuff.
That's fun stuff. I'm sure we'll get the comments again. You don't get it. You're going to be out. You're going to be left out. My bank account's going to grow 8,000%. And it's like, that's fine, dude. You do you. You don't care about people. You want to scheme and grift off people. That says a lot more. Yeah, you get your fucking NFT money. Good for you.
I'm not impressed. Like, you are a shallow, awful person.
Yeah. And the best thing I got about status, when people are like, whoa, it's the same thing with like Lamborghinis. Like, you can drive a Lamborghini.
Right.
And then the final best comment I saw said, no one's getting laid based upon their NFT.
Oh, absolutely not. Absolutely not.
You want to come to my computer and see the NFTs I own? You want to come back to my apartment? I'll show you my NFTs. No one fucking cares.
If you're an athlete, you know the greatest motivator of all is the fear of letting your teammates down. After all, a team is only as good as its weakest link. So you owe it to those wearing the same jersey as you to be your best every time you step on the field. That's why there's no vape in team. When you vape, you can expose your lungs to toxic chemicals that can damage your lungs. If you're a step behind, the team's a step behind. Brought to you by The Real Cost and the FDA.
Ian,
Pat,
God, Christmas is coming early this month.
Oh yeah,
with deep dive gameplay videos for the Intellivision Amico.
I don't even know where to like launch in since we kind of skipped a week in terms of Amico coverage.
There's been a few. We saw that we covered the disastrous first one for Tank Battle / Battle Tanks.
Yep,
there's a third name. They came out with Shark and Missile Command. There was also an article that came out, another German games site, or no, actually print publication, M Games, covered and played the Amico for several hours. Hans Ippisch, the head of Intellivision in Germany there, brought it over to show it off. The same way we talked about, I think in November, was Heinz, the people that, not the ketchup, it was H-E-I-N-S-E.
Heiss.
Heiss? Oh, Heiss. No, N. Heiss. Covered Heiss. It.
H-E-I-S-E. Yep.
And were not favorable to it. And M was not favorable towards it as well. But
they were further less favorable. They were less favorable than Heiss. Heiss, you could tell they were kind of like beating around the bush. I can't imagine that Hans Ippisch or Tommy are happy with this, because so far these have been fairly controlled things with people trying to be positive. This is not positive. It stops just short of trashing the entire thing, but it has nothing positive to say about it.
So you might ask yourself, well, why, if this isn't positive, why would they be showing them off to, and why are these German publications and outlets? Well, if you remember, we constantly bring up that Intellivision and Tommy tries to sweep under the rug. They got several hundred thousand dollars of Bavarian grant money to help produce these Intellivision games. These Amico games.
I feel like that's the only money they've really truly had to play with.
Well, without that, they wouldn't have most of these games developed for the
right. Market. Exactly. The only progress we've seen has really kind of come from this money.
So what it seems to be is that one of the conditions from the German government is like, well, you have to show off what you're doing to these publications. It's part of almost like,
yeah, you can't just take the money and be like, we're working on it, we promise.
It's a good faith thing to make sure that you're not just stealing the money, probably. That's why I'm doing it, because these articles do not look good. So I guess we'll go over the articles first before we get into the gameplay videos. Yeah, why not? So, how is it? Topfree.de has a translated summary of it, Ian, if you want to go through that here. And this is some of the highlights. I have the whole article, by the way, translated in a document. But this is for editorial staff. Stefan Heller from Endgames took a close look at the Intellivision Amico game console and wrote a short one-pager from it in the current section. The editor's conclusion is interesting. This is the conclusion. After several hours of hands-on, we currently still have doubts that the console can distinguish itself as the Wii's successor. Jerky performance of the games and the complex menu navigation, exactly what Heiss said.
Yep.
It took minutes, remember, to get into a game?
Yeah.
But above all, the slightly spongy control, Heiss said that as well, via the turntable caused us problems again and again, and the movement control degenerated into wild waving. We'll get into that in a minute. The touchscreen is suitable for simple entries in hectic titles. It seems anything but intuitive. It takes a long time to get used to it. We were also still skeptical about the announced game replenishment or games.
So basically like the release schedule and whether or not these are actually coming out, basically. But basically they're saying we don't have faith in like any of these games actually coming out.
So the spongy controls, Heiss said that as well. Spongy buttons. We always said these better not be spongy buttons. Those little, top. Well, no, ones.
They're talking about spongy control on the turntable. They're talking about the disc.
Oh, well, that's not good,
right?
Either. Okay. No. Oh, that's not good at all. You don't want spongy controls. You don't. Sponges are cute little animal creatures things, but you don't want that as your control mechanism.
Now, Tommy really thought he was reinventing the fucking wheel here, and instead he's just made a big fucking brick of shit that no one wants to touch.
So the wild waving, what is that in reference to? Well, the M article doesn't say it, but my insider info is that they did show off cornhole to M, and it was a mess.
Yep.
It just was not functioning right. And so from what I hear, Hans is upset at the coverage that's been happening. You're forced to do it because it's part of the reason you have these games to begin with is showing these off to these German publications, but they are not shills. They are not cultists. They are being objective and they know that this is garbage.
Right.
They played it for several hours. So this isn't just like, oh, you got to play it to see what it's all about. Or else you can comment on it. Well, two major German games publications have tried it and are not impressed.
Something else to point out about this that does not look good at all is that this has been posted twice on the official Amico subreddit, uh-huh. and they've deleted it each time.
Oh, they deleted it the second time? I thought it was up again. Somebody asked
it was up, and then someone said it was posted again and then deleted again. So maybe they tried putting it up a third time. But, it's one thing to, and I don't agree with it. It's one thing to, eliminate posts based on YouTubers that you don't like who have been negative on it.
Yeah, trolls.
But when you start eliminating actual magazine coverage because it's not favorable, that looks awful. Zadok Pay, it's a piece of shit.
Oh, yeah, I did see that yesterday on the official Amico form, which is a corporate form, which isn't allowed, by the way.
Yeah.
Someone said, why was it deleted? Like, this is a real publication trying it. What's going on here? And it got a lot of comments. You're right. Today it's gone. It's been wiped.
Yep.
It's been wiped.
Yep.
So don't believe your lying eyes, basically. That's where we're at with this stuff. Hide it from the Amico Reddit people that, there's 1.4 thousand people, but I guarantee you most of those people are just there along for the train wreck. They're not ordering a console, but some probably are. And to them, it's probably fair. If I had pre-order money on this and you're keeping negative criticism away from me in the hopes that I stick around for the ride. Well, yeah, you're one step above a fly by night company. Then you're not allowing me to see honest criticism of a product that's being pre-ordered that I've waited now, over
3 years
a year to get. It'll be 2 years from March since the first pre-orders. 2 years since March. So, very damning. There's more in the full article. I guess it's not worth going over. Well, I can go through if you want.
We can keep moving on this. I mean, the important stuff is basically the controller is shit. The games are jerky, they said, when it comes to control. They say there's some lag with the touch screen, I believe. It's basically everything we know, but we're finally seeing it in magazine publications. And this has probably been the most full-throated a German publication has been about it.
I'll add a couple more from there. This is from the M article. If you are in the action, thus the turbo and hectic titles, how you activate Astro Smash to hit the screen, that works anything but intuitive and takes a lot of getting used to. Again, when you have to have clicky buttons or buttons and then tapping, and it controls, when you have three different ways to control on one controller, basically, or four, it's not intuitive. Then they say there are more than 80 titles in development. Pfft, okay.
No.
But most of them are just porting oldies. Just under 20 euros seems steep compared to the competition. And Earthworm Jim 4, on the other hand, sprays the hope that the Amico not only in the long term serves a recycling point of contact. All right, that didn't come through. Earthworm Jim 4 is not being worked on.
No.
I would love to be proven wrong. And
Tommy already said it wasn't being worked on.
I love to see people hold out hope for that. All right, that's the M article. All right, let's talk about Shark, shall we?
I mean, sure. Here's the thing with these. Shark and Missile Command, we're going into them. I don't have a ton to say because this is, we're finally at the point, we're at the last thing. This is the, now people need to defend just awful, shitty looking games. Even if these controlled perfectly fine, they are still games that you can see Tommy and John getting bored with within 5 minutes of playing when they're doing these demonstrations. And it's interesting to see people get excited about them or pretend to be excited about them, because if you wanted shitty $3 action arcade games, the Switch is full of them, yet there's no one out there genuinely covering these garbage titles on the Switch. Why? Because there's no Tommy Tallarico to puff up.
Sure.
There's no genuine interest in stuff like this. And that's the thing I find the most disingenuous is the people who are like, well, Switch has these. Well, then why don't you just play them on the Switch? Mm-hmm. Oh, these games don't look that bad. Well, then why don't you cover games like this on the Switch or the PS4 or any other system?
Or on your phone.
Or on your phone. Any other, you could, if this is what you love, if this is your thing, you could have been covering this for years. Mm-hmm. But you don't. You just love Tommy Tallarico and the Amico.
Because it's not about the games.
Right. It's not about the games at this point. It's about proving the haters wrong.
It's the sunken cost fallacy. I've invested all my emotion and time, and maybe hundreds of hours of YouTube videos, into covering this train wreck. I can't stop now.
So I'm going to sit here and tell you with a straight face that I'm really excited to play Shark Shark for 3 hours.
So I'll tell you about Shark Shark here. I still like, you look at this video. It's like, it's like 3 minutes to get into the game. Pick the color of your fish, which matches the glow on your controller, which I never knew even a four-year-old playing a video game. And you know what character you're controlling in your video game. You need a constant reminder to look at your controller. This is such a huge gimmick that it's increasingly more and more transparent about this LED shit where please show me where this LED thing's going to matter. I mean,
I still remember Tommy specifically addressing me in an Atari Age post where I was like, so he said that these games can't be done without this controller. And he's like, yes, these games can't be done without it. Like, show me anything that is truly unique. Anything here.
I like that this pick up and play thing. Then you go and there's like a whole fucking like instruction manual screen telling you like the points and what to do, because that's simple and intuitive. And then you go into the gameplay itself. It's a single screen game. And you have to, eat fish, right?
Yep.
You eat fish with your little fish, and then your fish gets bigger and then slower the more fish you eat, which makes it harder, which is weird because then you are punishing being good at a game. But that's a whole other conversation. That's a whole game design issue.
Did you notice that the levels are like 40 fish each? I mean, talk about slow, uninteresting, repetitive gameplay. I have to eat 40 fish to get through a level. That's insane.
And then that's it. You eat fish. So in terms of the graphic style, it's all over the place. Yep. You can tell that they probably purchased the assets from they're not matching. Like some of the stuff does not, like the main fish look more cartoony than the shark does. And the little fish look more realistic. You can
purchasing assets is fine. I mean, tons of places have to do it, but if you're going to do it, one, make sure that they're actually purchased. And two, you've got to create some sort of a theme. That game looks like fucking a toy box vomited.
Yes, it's not uniformed. The look. I don't understand why I'm seeing the purple fish get bigger the more fish being eaten and going slower. So that might be a nice mechanism if you're playing with two people that are different skill levels. But again, you are punishing being good at the game. This is a game that even I think a child will get tired of 10 minutes in. Like this is like a tech demo. It's the same way Battletech. This is like a tech demo to me. We're not in 1981 playing the original Shark Shark. These are tech demos.
Yeah,
that's it. And they play for 20 minutes and
they're proof of concepts. And they look like they're fucking bored out of their skulls by the end of those 20 minutes.
No complexity, just no depth. Different background for stage two. And so I don't have a huge amount more to say about this. This is one of the packing games. If you want to feign excitement for this, God bless you. Why not just play the original Shark Shark then, with at least a unique graphic style compared to this, right?
Yeah,
that's Shark Shark. Then there's Missile Command, which dare I say could be the worst game thus far that we've seen of these. I'm not even trying to be facetious. I think this is the worst one.
No, it looks miserable, and it kind of completely.
Original Missile
Command was very strategic. You had to be very careful with your placement. It wasn't exactly a super fast game. Everything on this Missile Command looks like spray and pray.
Yes. So here's the issue with this Missile Command. First of all, the graphic style is uninteresting. The assets of the cities look amateurish. Like, again, they just purchased some asset. They dropped it in. The missile silos look cheap. They don't look like anything. They look like I hate to say it, like red and yellow, just dongs whipping around. from the three.
Yeah, exactly. And that's the cities are a non-animated, like literally like a JPEG that just kind of floats there.
Yeah, we'll just
and
copy.
It's really bad.
We'll just copy and paste it over, basically.
Yeah.
Compare this to the Atari Recharge one just came out. That has a nice, clean, graphical, like vector style. Mm-hmm. It has some uniformity of look to it. Like that's what you'd want in your Missile Command. Missile Command is clean and simple. It's clean and simple. That's Missile Command. You had a little X cursor originally going around. You had nice vector graphics. You can see everything with the lines. This art style, the reticles are ridiculously big.
Well, the other thing about the original Missile Command is like even that game, that old, the information was presented in a way that wasn't busy or messy. Like your missile bases, it actually showed how many missiles you still had at each. You didn't need a special meter or anything like that. It was all information that could be gleaned from looking at the game.
Yeah. The reticules are too big. They're busy. They do have the little information for how many missiles you have on there. Great. That's fine. But it's too much. And then let's talk about the control scheme. So this is one of the ones that you can't do on the Switch because you use the touchpad as the cursor to aim. And then you fire with the I think the control pad different ways to go, one of the three silos or their triggers. So if you go into the video at like 3:30, you can see how it's moving on screen, showing it with the controller, I guess in Tommy or John's hand using the cursor. As we suspected, it was probably not going to be super precise. I said this like 2 years ago.
Oh yeah, and you need precision in a game like Missile Command, or at least you did in the original.
Yes, you need super precision. That trackball was precise. You can use a little minute little movements.
Yeah, if you want to get rid of the smart bombs and stuff, you've got to be real specific about where you're going.
The problem is once it gets faster, you can see them just like whipping it around just to shoot as much as they can because there's no precision. And the other issue is that there is a delay, it looks like, in where you press it. The cursor comes like after it's pressed. It's not instantaneous at all. I'm not saying if we're going to say it has to be instantaneous. There's no simple way then, if it's not instantaneous, to go left, right, center, left, and move it quickly. It'll be a mess. You're never going to be able to get to the more advanced stages with an issue.
Well, my guess is there's just not more advanced stages. My guess is just very easy.
They got the stage 26 with two players, and it was like a desperate, like you said, spray and pray. Let's just shoot all around and get our smart bombs. Like
that's, no strategy.
That's not Missile Command. Missile Command, there is some strategy in Missile Command. It's not just twitching.
Oh, yeah. No, Missile Command is very strategic.
And then the comments, even on the official Miko Reddit, the gameplay seems fine. This is one of the comments. The gameplay seems fine, but I can't get behind these graphics at all, especially after Missile Command recharged. The Atari reimaginings on Amiga really should have followed Breakout's lead from a visual perspective. That game looks great, certainly better than any of Atari's reimaginings of it. Well worth $2.50. Not sure about $250, though. I forgot to talk about the Shark Shark Amico Reddit comments. Official Amico Reddit comments on Shark Shark.
Oh, yeah. He's
literally glowing over the very basic gameplay features. Got this game for free on Xbox a decade ago. It was called Feeding Frenzy. $250 will get you games of this quality. Simply amazing. So these are the top comments about it.
Yeah.
On the official Reddit.
They've completely lost. Yeah, they've completely lost the plot. They have no control over anything.
Three levels with early 2000s Flash gameplay. I think Astro Smash looks fun, but this is an absolute train wreck. Honestly, Astro Smash might be the best looking one, which is not saying a huge amount.
But no, at all.
Maybe 5 minutes of gameplay could be had here before getting bored and literally never booting it up again. I think it's funny how they try to say this could replace playing cards or a board game. Board games take more than 10 minutes to play. Most of them, 5-10 minutes.
The average good board game is going to run you anywhere between half an hour and an hour and a half.
These games are not our experiences. They're not.
No, there's not the depth. There's not the opportunities for banter. There's nothing.
Do you want to talk about, did you see the multiplayer on Missile Command that Tommy himself came up with?
I thought I did, and I thought I understood it, but I don't know that I do anymore. It just seems like a race to collect the most certain colored icons. I thought it was like an air hockey thing. I thought there was like a puck you had to shoot around, but
you got to shoot the other silos and stuff. You need to like access to be able to actually target the cities and silos. It's one person on top, one in the bottom, and there are items you shoot for in the middle, but it just seems like a mess. It's a twitchy mess. It looks like a twitchy mess.
When it comes down to it, you look at a game like Missile Command and you look at a game like Battle Tanks, and it looks like the for a system that is supposed to rely on multiplayer, the two games that they've showed with like a versus multiplayer, it just appears to be, well, again, spray and pray, aim and shoot as much as you can.
That's what we got with Battletech.
What?
Sorry, I cut you off. This doesn't look like a casual game to me, Missile Command. It looks like you have to be like somewhat of a quote unquote hardcore gamer to get into this multiplayer. I don't see 4 year olds understanding this multiplayer. I just don't. There's nothing simple about this at all.
Tommy must know something we don't.
This is Boomer Command to me. This is not for 4 year olds.
He's a genius.
So after this, though, I mean, I guess they have a few more they can show. I guess they can show skiing.
I believe Fox and Forest is, or I'm sorry, Finnegan Fox is next.
Is that what's next? But
I think that's what's next.
At some point, you're gonna run out of since that's a more of an action platform, probably is the most like longer experience than these are. Maybe you can not hold the controller upside down this time to troll some YouTubers doing Finnegan Fox. But at some point, though, I think what's more damning about these videos, it's like, yeah, these games are being developed mostly with German taxpayer money, but the people that actually want this system, the air is coming out of the balloon, basically. They're like, oh, this is what I've now been waiting waiting years for.
Yeah, there's nothing that's going to come out and magically surprise you. You are looking at it. You are playing bottom barrel cell phone games.
And then guess what? If you like Finnegan Fox, well, just play Fox and Force then. It already exists.
Or if you want, or spend $5 on the thing that no one talks about it, but spend $5 a month on Apple Arcade for a couple of months and get your fill.
Yeah, Apple Arcade has high quality app games. They're not shovelware games. They're all curated. There you go. You get your curation there.
Yep.
You can play the nice Frogger game. I like that Frogger game a lot.
Yeah, it was really good.
All right. Anything else to add here? I guess we'll see. Finnegan Fox, their version of Sonic.
I haven't done it, but I do want to point out, and I feel like someone should. Someone asked about the winners of the E3 contest and also mentioned the golden ticket stuff. And Tommy had a...
That was like a long time ago, golden ticket stuff.
Well, it was supposed to be like a once a month contest for a free for a free system. It was supposed to be like a running contest. Someone asked about the winners, because I think we've even made jokes about it. Like that was just a way to get email addresses. Mm-hmm. Tommy actually responded in that post on the Amico subreddit, and it was like a real quick, I could almost hear the nervousness. Everyone was contacted and everyone received their prizes. We don't announce the names unless they tell us we can't. And that was it. And someone was like, I think legally you have to. So I went and looked into it. Legally, yes. If a company holds a contest in the United States, it's not even by state. It looked like it was the entire US. They have to present you with a list of winners. Otherwise, they could just, I don't know, make shit up. Not give out prizes so they could get your emails and then say that they have a huge address. So I have not done it, but someone should write in television and ask for a list of the winners and see what they get. I wouldn't put it beyond them to make people up, but I don't think there's any winners there.
Okay. I found it. Someone asked about the winners of the E3 competition. Someone says he has yet to announce the golden ticket winners, 9 or 10 consoles and a bunch of shirts. I think one person from a foreign country claimed to have won a shirt, if I remember correctly. Tommy said all of the winners were contacted and received their prizes. We only announce the winners' names if they allow us to. Someone named Uncle Bob says, I understand why this is in play, and I'm sure you have your ducks in a row, but you might want to have your legal team check your home state's laws and see if there's a requirement to provide a winner's list upon request, usually snail mail. Heck, some states require you to file a winner's list with the state. Thomas says, please feel free to reach out to support at intelligence.com. I'm sure they'll be glad to help you out. Yeah.
Sounds like passing the buck to me. But I did look, and I did some looking into it, and as far as I can tell, it's not a state-by-state thing. In the United States, if you hold the contest, you have to provide a winner's list.
It's a federal thing. Got it.
Yep. So okay. If anyone wants to do that, by all means, that could be interesting.
Write a letter and see what happens.
Yeah.
An official letter. Registered
mail. Get to the bottom of that. I'm sure that, I feel like we would have seen all, I feel like Tommy would have been quick to retweet all the people very excited to win an Amico.
Holding up their t-shirts at least. Or they got
t-shirts.
they're print on demand fucking shitty t-shirts. Sure. All right. Anything else to add? Or are we good?
No,
we're good. Finnick and Foss. We got to bundle these together. I can't cover each individual one. We got to bundle these games together, I think, like this. There's not enough to talk about with each individual one.
But there's not even anything like juicy or salacious to talk about. It's just a shitty fucking game. That's what I mean. We're at the point now where people have to really like look at the camera straight faced and tell us that they're excited for this stuff after seeing it. And that's actually something I can't handle. I can't stand seeing these people do that.
It's almost like, well, they had no shame because they keep demeaning themselves month after month, year after year. So obviously they had no shame. They keep going lower. So, you know, it is what it is. It is what it is.
Yep.
Ian, we got a Patreon, don't we?
Patreon.com/CU podcast. You go, you exchange some money, you get full video podcasts, you get bonus podcast bits every
week.
I do writings. I gotta try to get one to you this week, but it's I'm on vacation.
I'm working today.
Yeah. Well, we're doing a shorter podcast.
Not shorter for me in terms of editing, but okay.
And we do poll topics.
There we do. In second place, are sealed game collectors being mistreated? 38%. I had a weird feeling that might get voted on out of spite to ruin the holiday one. But in first place, holiday gaming stories with relatives. 62%, Ian. Going back to our youth, maybe even while we're older, what are some of your gaming stories around the holidays with your relatives? Could be games you got for Christmas or what they got for Christmas. Maybe some handheld toys, whatever.
So stuff that the one thing that really sticks out to me is how popular my Arch Rivals machine was around the holidays when people would come over, and we'd stand on the back porch in the freezing cold and play Arch Rivals. So that was
You had an arcade machine? You had Arch Rivals?
I've told you this. I've mentioned this on the podcast more times than I can count.
No.
Yes, Pat. This is just you not remembering anything. That was my first arcade machine. I had an Arch Rivals machine in Buffalo, and it sat on my back porch, and I really wish I had kept the board to it, but I didn't know anything about it. When I left, it had kind of fallen into disrepair and it ended up being junked.
Where'd you get it?
I ordered it off of eBay in like 1999 or 2000. It was one of the weirdest purchases I've made. A huge shipping truck kept driving by my house trying to find where to park because the person who was shipping it to me was like, yeah, they do residential. They don't do residential. So I had to go down to a truck yard to actually pick it up, and we got it home.
What did you pay? What did you spend on it?
It was $115 plus, I think, like 100 shipping. I think it cost me $200.
$100 a ship, like on a freight, must have been close or somewhat close.
Yeah, I don't know, but yeah, I think I spent like $220 on it total.
Funny thing is, that was for $99,000. You spent too much versus like my auctions. You got that for like $100.
Well, it was just the shipping that killed me.
Sure, but like that's about, for people out there, that's how much arcade machines were in the late 90s, early 2000s. They were cheap. Working machines were cheap as long as
they
were classic. The classics like Miss Pac-Man, Pac-Man always went for a lot of money. Donkey Kong, those always went for a lot of money. Centipede, but like the regular third party games.
No, there was an arcade that closed down down the street from my house, and I jumped on it too late. But they had multiple Pac-Man machines, and they had a sign in the window. They were selling them for $200 a piece, and they took forever to sell.
Wow, at our auctions, that would have went for more. That went for like $500-$600. Miss Pac-Man's went for almost $1,000, even 20 years ago. Anyway, sorry. So you played it on your cold back porch. Your relatives.
Yep. And I remember that always being a lot of fun. And other than that, Mario Kart always seemed like something that you could find that at any, you'd find that at any house. And that was always a good time. But my family was never like super, super into video games. I do remember one year them playing like Rock Band or something, but I didn't get into it.
Oh, so my Rock Band story was it was like father's cousin's kids. That's like first cousin, first removed or whatever. I don't know. It's like you're related to them by blood, but it's like you're not close cousins. But you kind of,
right.
The one kid actually looked like me, Brian. Kind of looks like me. And they got that Guitar Hero stuff back in like, you know, while I'm still in Jersey, like 2006, 2007 when it started blowing up around there, right? Like mid-2000s. And it was interesting that like they had them, they were playing it. And I'm like, all right, I'll try this. And I got into a little bit. I wasn't good at it, but I got into it. And that was like my first foray into into the rhythm games was back then was because they all had it. They all got it the same Christmas. It was like the on that side of the family, there was like 4 or 5 cousins, you know, 2 sets of them. There's like a sister and brother and a sister and brother on that side. And so we played that, and I'm like the oldest, besides me, my sister, the older of that group. Again, not direct cousins, but related. And, you know, we played that. Going back to like as a child, though, that's where obviously most of the memories are, because you go to your gatherings, like you said, you meet up with like my direct cousins, of which on the one side, I had like 10 direct cousins. And we average in, oldest to youngest was like 10, 12 years in between, something like that. Something in that range, 10 years in between, oldest to youngest. So if you were like 13, there was a 3-year-old, but mostly within like 3-4 years there. And they always had, you know, the new NES games, and we would all gather around and play. There was my one aunt had like a game for the kids. They had like a cool like toy play / game room. They had like off the edge of the house, they had all their toys. There was couches. They had their own TV. Little brats had their own TV. Had their own.
Oh yeah, console. My cousin. I had a couple cousins with something like that too, and I was always very jealous.
Yeah, they had their own fucking playroom. I didn't have my own playroom. We played in the back room where the rec room where the TV was in the furnace. It was like one of the haunted rooms of Castle, not Castle Country. Well, I guess my parents. But anyway, so we'd always play the newest game there. But at that same aunt's house, we always did the Secret Santa between the cousins. So the aunts and uncles would get the cousins' gifts. And so the one year, I might have told this story on my Christmas video that came out last year, an East Punk Christmas video about what I got for Christmas each year, video game stuff. People were amazed I remember what video game stuff I got each year. It's like, no, I remember that stuff. I remember it. The years were off here and there, then I figured out what years based upon when the games were released. And then the one year, me and my two other cousins, the closest of the three boy cousins, were all within a year or two. We got the 3 Radio Shack handheld games.
Nice. The Tank Battle, the racing one, and
Highway.
Tank
Battle, Alien Attack.
That's it.
The OG ones from like 86, 87. That's when they redesigned and came out with them again. We released them, but the little rectangle ones. Damn, I miss Radio Shack. They did their own toys, they did their own handheld games every year. What a great Texas corporation. I think it was Texas. So the one year we all 3 of us got that. And I was jealous because Tank Battle seemed more fun than Highway. It's Highway. You're picking up fucking hitchhikers for some reason. And it's you're not killing.
I loved Highway. It's super simple, but I think that's my favorite one.
It is fun though. But yeah. My cousin Chris wouldn't let me play. He wouldn't even let me try Tank Battle. Like, you let me try it. Chris, like, ah. My cousins were selfish. And then Alien Attack, I didn't play either. I just felt weird because I got Highway. They got the ones blasting aliens and tanks, and I got fucking Highway. But I love Highway. I ended up keeping that same exact one to this day. Then ended up buying one on eBay complete in the box just for the hell of it as well.
Oh, nice.
The original, like I said, the OG one, because they re-released them, I think, like in the late 80s, early 90s with different design. They weren't rectangles anymore. They were like, they put extra shit on the top and bottom. Like, it was slightly non-squared off the case.
The original Highway was red, right?
Orange.
Orange. Okay, yeah.
Maybe I'm colorblind, but to me it was orange. Orange, Tank Battle was blue, and yellow was the Alien Attack one. So that was a big one. And then, of course, every year after that, for a few years, everyone had their Tiger handhelds you bring over. The 3 brother cousins I always talk about, of course I had a fucking Game Boy. Of course I did, but I brought over like my Double Dragon or Ninja Gaiden handheld. You know, you get sick in the car playing those. That's the thing I remember, like, I had to stop playing them in the car because your head would get weird with the motion. I would get sick.
I get real sick. I get real sick if I try to read in the car. Yeah,
anywhere you get with the focus off from the movement does something to some. Not everyone, but some people. It does something to
it. Yeah, no, I'm definitely one of those people. It does something too.
Not on a plane though, because I guess a plane you're moving so quickly you don't realize it, and you're above the earth, you're not feeling it. But yeah, that's some of the memories there. I'm trying to think of a specific game memory that happened around Christmas, where like I went over and it was a brand new game that everyone was playing. It's probably escaping me right now, but I'm guessing there was probably 89 or 90. I'm trying to think of who had Super Mario Brothers 2. They probably got that Christmas that I wanted. I got this Zelda 2. That would have been what, 88. I'm trying to remember if that would have happened. I'm guessing it would have happened and we probably shared it. We probably played that in that rec room. and then one aunt's place with all the kids. We probably all play Super Mario 2. We probably did that. Yeah. Hard to get that though that year.
Real quick, I do remember our type RC Pro Am being a big holiday game, like the first year or the second year I got my NES, I think.
It's like 88 or so.
Yeah. It just happened to be something my uncle got me, and I remember sitting around and playing that. That's an older memory, though. Real quick, though, just because you mentioned Zelda 2, Vonnie got me one of them Zelda game watches.
Zelda?
For Christmas. Fucking love that thing. I've been playing Zelda 2 on it. It's really nice. That's got to be a different screen than the Mario one. I just don't remember, because that screen is super nice. Like, very nice for the size.
Yeah.
It's awesome.
My only complaint was maybe over time you're straining because the characters are so small, like a constant movement.
Well, sure. I mean, but that's any tiny handheld.
Sure. You got to take breaks. And then you point out that there's the LED of the Triforce on the back of the case. I didn't realize
that. No, no one's pointed that out. That made me so happy when I saw it. I was like, that's really cute.
You text me randomly. You missed this in the review. And I was like, I was like, a review of what? We just did a review in the podcast of like the pocket. And he's like, oh no, it's the fucking Zelda game watch from like 2 months ago. Whenever we went over, we go over that November. Does time mean anything anymore this year? Jesus,
it does not.
Slow or fast? What are you looking at?
It does not mean anything. I was looking up the highway, and I found Air Pinball, which is interesting.
Air Pinball?
Yeah, it's a Radio Shack thing.
That's been a later one. Yeah. There was only three that first year. But all right, that's our holiday gaming stories.
Yeah,
with relatives at least. Obviously, we all got Ikari Warriors and our Spy Hunters and played the hell out of them when we first got them. I think the Christmas of '91. Someone must have got Super Mario World and Super Nintendo. I mean, I got mine then. I remember a couple days after Christmas, I got mine. I told that story before.
Yeah,
picked it up at Sixth Avenue with Christmas cash and returned gift cash to get it, and we got it at Sixth Avenue. Somehow it was cheaper. I remember that, like, there was like a deal on it. Instead of it being like whatever it was when it came out, like $250 or $200, it was like $10 cheaper somehow. I don't know if my uncle finagled the person working there. I don't know. I think there was like some sort of weird thing happened where it wasn't the MSRP. I don't know. Maybe he stole it. I have no idea. But no, my cash went towards that. I think it was $250 when it came out, the Super Nintendo. I think. I'm not positive. I want to think it was.
That seems about right.
So anyway, well, that's our fun. Well, hopefully you make your own memories this year playing games with relatives.
That's right.
With your Nintendo Switches and your PS5s and your analog pockets and all that good fun stuff. All right, we got voicemails, don't we?
Yeah, let's do a couple.
Anchor.fm/TheCUpodcast. You go, you leave messages. You hopefully don't insult us too much.
Hi, Pat. Hi, Ian. Name's Ash. Love the podcast.
Hey, Ash.
My question for you guys is, what are some video game secrets or, like, things that, you know, you discovered or unlocked as a kid that completely, like, blew your mind upon discovering it? For me, it was Kirby Nightmare and Dreamland. After you hit all the big red buttons in both normal and extra mode, extra, you know, being the half-health playthrough, you would unlock Meta Nightmare, and you could play it through the entire game as Meta Knight. And I thought that was just so cool. And it just, you know, I was so excited about it. But yeah, so keep up the good work for the podcast.
What blew your mind, Ian?
I mean, I'm just going to go back to Mario 1. I mean, the first time my parents showed me the Warp Zone, it did something to my brain. I don't know. It was,
you can skip ahead in a game.
It was more like, video games aren't these rigid things that I thought they were. Like, there's stuff hidden in them. There's like things to explore. I can't properly explain it, but seeing that was just, it opened up a whole new world. You know, I'd played video games before that, but like computer games, arcade game ports, I had never seen something as big and as thought out as Mario. You know, not only were there these whole worlds, but there were secrets. There were things you could skip. There were vines to find. I know it sounds really simple now, but I'm fucking 39 years old. And I mean, that's where...
Why didn't you bring that up in the last segment? You were gaming with relatives. It was Super Mario.
I guess that would have been around Christmas. But I was thinking like extended family.
Oh, relatives are your brother and sister?
Yeah. But seeing the warp zone for the first time, yeah, shocked me. Shocked me to my core.
To your core.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, yeah, I'm looking at it. Yeah. I'm going to play through Symphony tonight. I got
to
play that.
Jeez, you really need to play that one. Right?
Pat, you really are sleeping on one of the greatest games of all time, man. You have to play Symphony of the Night. Get yourself the Japanese version on the Sega Saturn.
No.
Or the PlayStation 1.
Yes.
I'll get to it. I'll get to it.
You really, really need to get to it. I mean, it's available on just about everything at this point.
I'll get to that. I'll get to it. I played the one on the, what was the DS one with the guy with the white hair? I played a decent amount of that.
That's a really good one, Aria of Sorrow.
Yeah, I played some of that one. I take some getting used to, like, the sort of the newer style Castlevania, but no, I liked it. I liked it. That was voice messageception for a second there, right?
Yeah,
it was like
a nested loop. Really threw me off.
Someone's gonna record that and then comment on that. it'll be re-nested.
Yeah.
All right, next one.
Hey, Pat and Ian, this is John from Belleville, Kansas. Hey, John. My question is, if either of you guys lived in Vegas, would you consider being the video game experts for the Pawn Stars? Love the show. Keep up the good work. Thanks.
Well, that'd be a funny job. It used to be Johnny the toy guy did it for my appearance and for a couple others. And I think there was something that happened with that. There was a falling out. And I think Johnny stopped appearing. Now it's, you know, I guess whoever's driving in the car with the person that has the sealed games becomes the expert.
Right.
Yeah. The expert's my friend that's coming along with the ride and talking about my sealed game.
Seems questionable.
Speaking of questionable, what's his name from Go Collect? Well, someone sent me a link. They were on Pawn Stars trying to sell a comic. The guy that lied about keeping the Nintendo Age forms and database up. That nice person. And someone pointed out to me he was just on to try to pump a comic. Probably the same sort of thing, you know. Probably the same sort of deal, sleazy deal there. Let's see, next one here.
Tommy Tallarico here, and if you're wondering where are all these Tommies coming from, I'd say, hey, if Spider-Man can do it, then why not me? Okay, for people saying the Amico may or may not exist, please, people love mythical consoles. Sega Neptune, boom. Nintendo PlayStation, boom. And the Intellivision Amico, boom. And if you're still not convinced, then take it from Shiggy himself. Yeah, that's what a Call Miyamoto-san these days, Shiggy. One day he says to me, Tommy, you delivered my firstborn son while we were hiking along the Sanobi River. Please call me Shiggy. So one barbecue weekend, he says, hey, Tommy, you know, console scarcity has worked wonders for Nintendo. And yet still people say to me, but Tommy, don't you feel bad that on Christmas morning, millions of children are going to be frothing at the mouth as they rip open their gifts, hoping for an Amico, only to be disappointed by a Nintendo Switch. And then boom, they smash it through the living room window in disgust. Well, hey, they're not my windows. Okay, that's the last you'll ever hear from me. So adios.
Okay. That's a clearly fake Tommy.
Yeah, that seems fake. But you know what? To break the fourth wall, that he has the voice mannerism and shakiness of Tommy. That's a fairly close how Tommy actually speaks when you listen to like hey, like
I'm gonna have to veto all further Tommies. Okay. I just
we can't have any fake Tommies in the show. But I'm saying that wasn't bad. That wasn't a bad impression. But we have our real Tommy that calls in, so we can't have.
We don't want the fakes.
We don't want the fakes like that. But no, I actually think that was a pretty good impression.
Hey, Pat and Ian. This is Alex from Wisconsin. Curious as to what your favorite junk food is you like to indulge in. Myself, I am a total sucker for a Slim Jim. If I see it at the checkout of a grocery store or a convenience store or what have you, I will likely pick it up and rip into it. I don't even know if that's real meat, but by God, I love it. Keep doing what you're doing. Love the podcast. And remember to always snap into a Slim Jim. Yeah.
That wasn't bad.
I love a Tabasco Slim Jim. I'm not going to lie.
That's a thing. I didn't know that.
Tabasco Slim Jim. Love them dearly. Other than that, I have occasionally eaten a Tijuana Mama. And those are generally highly frowned upon. Those are spicy pickled sausages that you can get at the gas station.
Ooh, that seems like a risk.
It is. It's absolutely like a risk.
Russian roulette via food.
100% not a great idea. Ooh, but I love it.
I think I'd rather eat gas station sushi than that. Nachos. that counts as junk food. I mean, there's a restaurant that has nachos with like some protein, like chicken or carnitas.
You're ordering them.
I have to order them. I try to say, oh, it's for the table, right? No, it's for me. But it's just an excuse to get people to eat. I got to do that. And brownie sundaes. I mean, that's more of a dessert, but like I have to order a brownie sundae as well. Like those are like the two things that you have to get for sure. Let's see. Next one here.
Hey, Batman. This is Michael from Iowa. Just real quick question for you guys. What are your thoughts on big companies buying up game studios? Like Bethesda being sold to Microsoft, pretty much excluding anyone that does not own a Microsoft product for the upcoming Elder Scrolls game. Love the show. Thanks.
Well, I mean, there's no choice because otherwise, like what we said, these consoles aren't really different anymore. They're just high-end PCs, so they have to buy these companies or else there's no reason they can't compete.
But from a business aspect, sure, but I mean, that doesn't mean I have to like it. I think it's dog shit, and I think people who cheer for this because they are still attached to a console and they treat everything like fucking sports are goddamn idiots. I hate it. There's nothing good about a giant company buying up studios for exclusives.
Oh, no.
There's literally nothing good about it.
It becomes like movies then. And now with movies, there's no like medium-sized movies anymore. They're either really small, they're fucking tentpole huge pieces.
Yep.
But it's either you go all in on a big one, or it's a small one where you know it doesn't really cost much, so we can make some money. And who cares? There's not like these medium-sized movies anymore. And we'll probably see something similar for games. Unfortunately, you'll have your indie darlings.
We're already there, man. I mean, that was the PlayStation 4 to a T, and it's only happening more with the PlayStation 5, and that goes for the Xbox consoles. You have your handful of AAA games a year, and then everything else is coming out at, and indie's not the right word, but if you want to use indie as a term for an aesthetic, you have your 2D or smaller 3D games coming out. There's no AA games anymore.
Yeah, which is a shame, because there should be room for that. And now it's like totally controlled by counters, basically. Yeah. That's what it comes down to. There's less and less art involved when it comes to it. It's just, we know it's going to make money. We're going to put it out from off of a freaking spreadsheet here. Okay. Next one here.
Hey guys, this is Eli from Canton, Ohio. I just had a question for you. What horror movies do you think would make some good video games? Maybe Human Centipede, the Tiger Electronic Handheld, or Halloween Kills for the Hyperscan. Let me know, guys. Thanks.
Yeah, I don't know.
There was a Thing video game, right? On the PS3? Was it a PS2?
There was a Thing game on the PS2. I've never played it. There was actually a Halloween on the Atari 2600. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, they do this, but I mean, something like that. I would like to see like Friday the 13th on the Microvision. That would be cool.
On the Microvision.
Yeah.
The horror is seeing if we can play the damn thing because it's the screen's fucking gone.
Uh-huh.
Hey, Pat. Hey, Ian. This is Will out of Chattanooga, Tennessee.
Chattanooga.
Pat, I often see you on social media interacting with my boys from OSW Review, Jay Hunter, V1 and Mr. OOC. So my question for you, Pat, is who is in your boy stable? And Ian, if you're also a fan, same question. Thanks, y'all.
So the boy stable is like, who are your favorite wrestlers that weren't popular, weren't like world champions, like the ones that you don't think of, like the ones that are like, they're just like the throwaways. All right. I had to think about this, but I have my list, and it's usually five. All right. The one you know. Disco Inferno is the captain of my boy stable. I'm in love with the Disco Inferno character as a wrestler. Lovable loser. It's ridiculous. I actually thought he was a decent worker. And he had the Stone Cold Stunner ripoff. For a joke wrestler to have the Stone Cold Stunner is incredible. The chart buster. He's one. The Killer Bees. WWF mid-80s tag team. Brian Blair, I think, and I forget the second one. I love them, and I don't know why I love them. They put on their masks in order to trick the other team, but the one's curly mullet always came through the bomb, so I can always tell which one was which. He took off his headphones. All right, so that's a Avatar. Al Snow did this weird character called Avatar during the New Generation. I want to say it was like 94 to 96. Did this character called Avatar. It started really cool. It was a masked wrestler, and for some reason, I really liked the character. And it became a jobber, unfortunately. But I would get so excited watching Superstars. Oh, my God, there's Avatar. It was always part of a tag team that lost. And then finally, Billy Jack Haynes. Billy Jack Haynes was a I think a Northwest wrestler. Came to WWF for like a few years. He had the full Nelson as a finisher. He had his own LGN figure, I believe. He had a feud with Hercules Hernandez before it became Hercules. Around, I want to say it was around WrestleMania 3, where they went over who had the best full Nelson. And I'll never forget Billy Jack Haynes because I watched MSG Network where they would show once a month when they did the events, they would show him live from Madison Square Garden. Billy Jack Haynes fought Cowboy Bob Orton. It was probably 86. I'll never forget it. They did a roll up with the tights and right in front of the camera, Billy Jack Haynes bare ass. I'll never forget that as long as I live. Full moon right in front of the camera. And I think since they did them live, they couldn't edit that out. I watched on the MSG Network. So that's my boy stable. What about you, Ian?
I'm just gonna run. Hey, Hiroki, high 69. I'm gonna go with him. I'm gonna go with Stalker Ichikawa.
Not familiar.
Survival Tobita.
This is all Japanese wrestlers I'm not familiar with. Okay.
And then let's see. I gotta grab a couple US ones. Canyon, I guess, wouldn't count, would he? Because he was too popular.
He was popular.
At the end. At the end, he was too popular.
Yeah.
La Parca.
La Parca was kind of popular too, but okay,
La Parca was, I mean, if we're talking Mexico, La Parca was huge. But
even
US...
in WCW, he had people cheering for him. I remember.
Oh, no, I took signs to all the events for La Parca.
Yeah.
And I need a fifth.
Someone has to verify the Japanese ones because I'm not familiar with them. Yeah, come on. Is there one from the 80s that you like that was kind of like a loser? No.
No, not really. Oh. Don Fuji. We'll go with another Japanese wrestler.
Oh, jeez, you're killing me. All right, I'll do a couple.
That's what I watched.
All right, a couple more here.
Hey, Pat. Hey, this is Josh again. My question is, if you guys could go back in the 80s and be on a game show, what would you want to be on? Maybe Supermarket Sweep, Legend of the Hidden Temple. I'd probably love to go to Toys R Us and be the kid that got the shopping cart. You got to put all the toys in his cart. Thanks, guys.
Well, that was a contest. Nickelodeon did every year. That wasn't a game show, but that would have been fantastic. The Nickelodeon Toy Run was like the dream come true. You got 5 minutes in a Toys R Us.
Yeah.
Then it became a fucking... KB, after all, I guess they must have lost the license by the mid-90s, but it used to be for years. Like, that was like the fucking dream. They did it once a year. They did one boy and one girl, 5 minutes, shopping cart, run through a Toys R Us, an empty Toys R Us. And as a kid, you would think about that like night and day. What would I go for? Eventually, people are like, right. Well, you get all the game slips and you get the games, or go, I guess they must allow you to go in the back and get the video games. There might have been a limit to that because you could take $20,000 worth of video games probably in 5 minutes at least if you just got all of them.
I remember watching those before. I remember watching them, and it was like, even though the video games were slips, when they did those contests, it looked like they put out specific things. So, like, you couldn't just go and grab all the slips. Like, you could grab most of the toys, but the video game section, I remember like seeing like physical systems and boxes out.
They put them out for you. You couldn't like just say, hey, I'm going to get 50 Super Mario 3s. You know what I mean?
Right, exactly. You couldn't just grab a stack of the slips and then go resell them or whatever.
Become the original reseller in 1988,
89. I would do Funhouse. I thought Funhouse always looked so fucking cool.
It looked fun, even though it was so hard to win. I think it was like a 10% of the time someone actually won that freaking thing. It looked very hard to do that.
Yes.
I would do like two more here.
Hey, Pat and Ian. This is Garrett over in Auburn, Alabama. I teach English at a nearby university, and I'm thinking about putting together a video game studies group or class. If you were going to teach something like this at a university, what would the name of the class be, and what are some of the games that you put on the syllabus? Thanks so much. Love the podcast.
Huh. Interesting. We were asked a question about, remember, like what would you do for like a video game, like hangout thing, like a activity group. We talked about maybe focusing on a console each week or each time. Wow. The syllabus for a game studies class, I guess you have to do like some of the more influential games and track them through the decades, I guess.
I don't want to cop out with an answer here, but my easy suggestion would be, if this is a serious question, like you want some help on it, look at the games that the Strong Museum has nominated every year for the past few years, because very rarely do Pat and I look at those and go, well, that shouldn't be on there. All of them are there for good reason. And the thing that I really like about what they choose to nominate is they're all over the genres. You get like, you know, Windows Solitaire, Doom, SimCity. Like they really do a good job of covering all the different genres and eras. So I would start there and look at what they've suggested, what they've nominated. I think nomination is good enough in this instance. They don't necessarily have to be winners, but look at that as a pool of games to maybe check out.
All right, two more.
You kept saying that.
Hi, Pat. Hi, Ian. This is Aaron from Durham in the UK. This is mainly a question for Ian. When you were working at Luna, what was the worst slip-up you made at the store? For example, accidentally accepting a counterfeit or selling a game to a customer for the wrong price. Love the podcast.
I want to get this one in because this is a good clickbait one.
So it was two Christmases ago at Luna, and I'm still mad at these people. It was extremely busy. I was the only person on that day. I can't remember, like someone had to call in sick or something. Anyways, someone was buying about $150 worth of Super Nintendo games, and someone else was buying like $10 worth of PS2 games. And I accidentally put the Super Nintendo games into the bag with the PS2 games. And I remember Treg telling me, because I could not find the games and I freaked out. So I called Treg and had him look at the security camera, and the people picked up their bag, looked in it, looked at each other, and walked out the door.
Oh, they knew they got extra stuff and didn't say anything.
Yep. And I mean, that was on me. But yeah, I still burn up over that one.
There was never anyone got a counterfeit in on you?
I've never taken a counterfeit, no.
You don't count the NWC as a slip up? That was...
I mean, that was a slip up, sure, but I mean, it wasn't a counterfeit. It was me not paying attention to a bag full of sports games.
That's true. All right, we got one more.
Hey guys, don't let anybody tell you that you can't have an Amico Christmas just because the Amico's not coming out this year, okay? Because the real Amico is the friends we made along the way. Am I right, bro? I was trying to get the thing out this year, but all these people on the team were saying, Tommy, there's not even a 1% chance we can get it out in time. And I said, never tell me the odds! But can't get it out, can't promote an Atari Age anymore. We do have Long Beach Public Access TV now, so there's that. And I know you guys are going to keep bashing me, but what's with that chick, Voxandra, who was running her pie hole about me last week? Listen, I'm used to taking that from you guys, but I will be damned if I got to take it from some Jersey skank, okay? All right, that was mean. It's Christmas, I should tell you. I got you guys presents. Ian, I'm giving you my Ferrari in NFT form. You'll love it. I even changed the oil for you. And Pat, I got you a free jar of my bath water. Merry Christmas.
Oh, thanks, Tommy. Looking forward.
It's good to hear from the real Tommy.
Good to hear from the real Tommy. It's good to hear from the real Tommy. Merry Christmas to you, Tommy Tallarico. I hope you have a nice, restful Christmas. Because definitely the Amico is going to come out Q1 2022. We just know it. We know it's not going to miss a fourth release date. We know it.
No, absolutely not.
That's it for the podcast.
That's it. We're done.
This was reasonable.
It was.
Wasn't that bad. Not a huge amount going on
Nope. This
week. But, you know, we'll see you back. Ian's going to be back here next week in person. We'll unwrap some gifts. I'll keep up the tinsel and the LCD lights for Ian for one extra week. I'm the type of person, though. Like, 2 days after Christmas, the stuff's good, done. The tree comes down. I don't like lingering.
Sure.
Also because I get super depressed the day after Christmas. December 26th to me is like the worst day of the year.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, it's over. It's done. And I fucking hate New Year's. So I don't even get started. Oh, New Year's sucks. So I take everything down and like just let all the negativity wash over me after the highs of Christmas. It's like, okay, now it's back to your shitty life. And now it's over. No more good food. No, the good food lasts like a good week.
Yeah.
A good week of leftovers you get until like early January. You can let that fresh mozzarella and the provolone cheese, that lasts a good week and a half, and the extra anchovies. I'm starving now. Okay, I gotta go. We done?
Yep. Bye, everyone.
Merry Christmas, Ian.
Merry Christmas.
You almost sound like you didn't want to say that to me. Okay.
Merry Christmas.